Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Once again, I truly appreciate all the love and support that has been coming in. The podcast is still growing. We're still looking to do some big things. I've been getting a lot of good feedback, a lot of good constructive criticism. Listen, when someone asks you for constructive criticism, don't be afraid to give it to them. Do not be afraid to give them the constructive criticism that they are looking for. Sometimes we are looking to spare someone's feelings, but if they're asking for it, they're asking for your honest and truthful opinion, then give it to them. You're not saving them any time or any trouble or any heartache if you tell them what they want to hear or tell them something that's going to spare their feelings. So don't be afraid to give them that constructive criticism. Let me give a couple shout outs to all my friends who have been giving me that constructive criticism. Trent, Mike, and Marlene, thank you so much for all your constructive criticism. Thank you so much. I'm truly taking it to heart and I appreciate it. And I want to make the podcast better for you, the listener, and I wanted this audience to grow. And I really want to give out some good information. So let's get into our episode for today. Today's episode, we're going to focus on this Amber Geiger, Botham Jean situation. Now, the verdict was just rendered. Let's just give a little brief history about this case and what's going on. So Amber Geiger is a 31-year-old female police officer from Dallas, Texas. She, one night after getting off of work, after working between 13 and 14 hours, gets off of work, goes to her apartment. She lived in an apartment building. She got off on the wrong floor, went to the same apartment door, which her apartment would have been at, except for it was the wrong floor. As she stuck her key in the door to open it up, she realized that the key did not work. However, the door was slightly ajar. She heard noises coming from what she thought was inside of her apartment. And she then opens up the door, confronts who's inside there. The guy's name is Botham Jean. And then during the confrontation, because she was still had her police uniform on, she took her sidearm out and then killed him. Those are the basic facts of it. And we'll get into a little bit more detail. Let's just talk about this case and let's just break some items down. And let's just have a nice, good, calm discussion. This situation has been broken down by many pundits, news articles, news outlets, and everything like that. But I want to give you my perception, my understanding, my wisdom, if I can call it that. And I want to give you my opinion as to what happened this night and why I agree with, number one, the conviction of Ms. Amber Geiger, former police officer Amber Geiger. And I want to give how law enforcement can learn a lesson from this and how this may impact the community at large. So let's dive into it. What I would suggest for anyone really is most of the snippets and clips and even Amber Geiger's full testimony and most of all this whole trial is online on YouTube or in some other outlet like that. So don't be afraid to go up there and watch it. But I would really suggest that people watch in particular the closing arguments of the prosecution. And that really changed my mind to a lot of the things that were going on. I would encourage you to watch the closing arguments of the defense. So make sure that you guys are checking all that out so you can be up to speed as to what I'm talking about and catch yourself up to speed. So let's talk about, number one, let's talk about why this is a big media sensation. This trial was broadcast across the world. Now, we have to ask ourselves, why was this trial worthy of such media attention across the world? And the answer is one that we have to look squarely in the eye and understand that we still have some type of problems concerning race in the United States. Now, the question could be asked, is that the media is doing? Have we as a society gotten past the racial animus, racial tensions that we have, and it's just the media that keeps it going? Is it just the media reporting that is causing these problems? That is a serious question that we need to ask and analyze, each and every one of us. Now, we understand that the media and those who have some type of influencing power are often on the wrong side of the social arguments, right? So what am I saying? If we remember the newest Dave Chappelle special, the media critics, the media pundits, critics out there gave it a 0% rotten score. Some gave it as high as 30, a Rotten Tomato score, and they all hated it. But the audiences, including myself, the audiences, the civilian population absolutely love Dave Chappelle's newest Netflix special, Sticks and Stones. If you haven't watched it, I would certainly encourage you to go watch it. It's hilarious. And he takes on this social culture as far as social justice warriors, as far as the Me Too movement, as far as abortion. He attacks everyone and no one is left unscathed from this. If you get a little bit of time, after you check out Captain Hunter's podcast, make sure that you check out Dave Chappelle's special on Netflix. That way you can just have the references to what I'm talking about. So anyway, my point is that sometimes the critics and the society that they're supposed to be influencing are completely at odds. And so that may be the case with what's going on with the media. We really have to take a look at this. Is the president right that some of this stuff is fake news? Is he right about that? I think he's often wrong about a number of things that he says, but we certainly can't put it out of our minds that there could be a disconnect between the media and the public who are getting the media from them. So that's just a side note. So the question has to be asked, is there an animus, an animosity, a continuing tension and stress between the Black community or any other racial minority community in this country and racial majority and or the police? We have to ask that question. You deal with that question. You analyze it. You think about it for yourself and think about it for yourself. How do you really think about Black people? How do you really think about Hispanic people? How do you really think about whoever? And I'll get into that in a little bit. But anyway, no matter what you think about it, this drives the media's attention. This drives ratings. This drives everything. And so therefore, we have a blonde, white female officer who kills an unarmed Black man. This is the media narrative. So is this a big story? Yes or no? Well, it was a big story. We know. But should it have been? That's a question for another time, and that's a question we can ask ourselves. Here's my take on it as a captain and as a Black man, is that we need to have some type of coming together concerning all this. And I think that it deserves media attention because there is some unrest in the Black community. Again, where does that unrest come from? Is it in the imagination of Black people? Is it being driven and instigated, and are the fires being stoked by the media corporations? Who knows? But regardless, when we peel away all these layers and we're trying to get down to it, there is a tension between the Black community and police officers. And the more police killings that there are of citizens, then the bigger and the more the problems that we're going to have. So here's another case where a female officer, even though she was off duty, she was still in uniform, she goes in and kills a man who's sitting in his home. And the community down there in Dallas and the communities in most minority communities across this country want answers for this type of thing, not just for Bolton John, but for any type of police involved shooting in which it's not a clear-cut case that someone is shooting at the police officer and or assaulting the police officer. We want to know that there's some type of justice coming about this. So here we are once again with this particular situation in which a police officer is involved in the shooting of a man. Now, let me ask you this question. Let me pose this question to you all out there. If the roles were reversed, close your eyes and just imagine for a moment that if Botham John had come home from his job after working 13, 14 hours, was tired, was texting on his phone, walks into what he believes to be his home, his apartment. The key doesn't work, but yet the door's open, opens up the door, sees a stranger in his home, particularly a small white female in his home, and then pulls out his gun and then shoots. Whether he's a police officer, you can imagine him as a police officer, you can imagine him as an ordinary citizen, you can imagine both of these parties as ordinary citizens, you can imagine any other way. My question to you is, who out there thinks that this would garner this media attention? Who out there thinks that this would have gotten all of the attention, all of the scrutiny that it has gotten? I'm sure that not many of us would have, because it would have been an open and shut case. This wouldn't even have made the national news. A Black man shoots a white woman, enters the wrong apartment. Oh yeah, right. This is what I can imagine people are saying. Oh yeah, right. Send him to jail, put him under the jail. Just another thug, just another this, just another that, this another problem. But the shoe is actually on the other foot in this situation, in which a small, petite, blonde woman walks into the apartment of another man and then guns him down. So this is what has caused the media fury and sensationalism. And so that's the reason for it. So what do I think actually happened that night? Let me just break this down as to what I think happened that night. In a previous episode that I discussed, please go back and listen to it. It's called Implicit Bias, Captain Hunter's podcast, Implicit Bias. Go back and listen to that episode. In that particular episode, I actually give what a definition of implicit bias. Let me read to you a definition of implicit bias. Implicit bias is an unconsciously held set of associations about a social group. Implicit biases can result in attribution of particular qualities to individuals from that group, also known as stereotyping. Implicit biases are the product of learned associations and social conditioning. That is from thoughtco.com. Probably a little bit different than what I read in my implicit bias episode. However, the basics are the same. One person sees a group of person or sees a representative of a particular group, and you attribute attributes to them. And this can be positive attributes or negative attributes. If you think that all, and I'm gonna get raw for a little bit here. If you think that all Asian females can't drive, then you're attributing some type of implicit bias towards them. If you think that all obese people just want to sit around and eat, then you're attributing implicit bias to them. If you think that all old people cannot do their job, that they should be off the job, that they're now cranky, and that they can't do the job their job well, then you are attributing implicit bias to them. If you think that all pretty people are worthy of more respect because they are pretty than someone who is not as aesthetically pleasing, then you are attributing implicit bias towards them. These are all examples and samples of implicit bias. And these things have to be controlled, and they have to be checked by those people in society who are performing a service. If you are a nurse or a doctor, and this has been studied numerous times, if you are a nurse and or if you are a doctor and you believe that Black people have a higher threshold for pain, therefore you don't prescribe them the same amount of medications that you would to someone else, then you are acting upon your implicit biases. Now, I'm not talking about implicit biases. Now, I'm not talking about explicit, right? I'm not talking about those people who want to just hurt other people or members of alt-right groups and all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about if you ask someone how they feel about a certain group of people, let's just stick to race for a little bit. If you ask someone how they feel about a certain group of people and they attribute intelligence to them, lack of intelligence to them, that they're lazy, that they all they want to do is take people's money, whatever nasty stereotype that you can attribute to them. And I want to remind people, some of these attributes and some of these ideas can be positive. They can be positive, but let's stick to the negative for the sake of our conversation. So I'm not talking about the explicit stuff. I'm talking about people who if you ask them how they feel about Black people, how they feel about white people, how they feel about Latin people, how they feel about Asian people. If you ask them how they feel about this, then they will tell you that they have no problem with them. They don't see race or some other statement like that. And that's all fine and dandy. However, when it comes to their actual actions, then this presents a problem. Once again, I gave the analogy of doctors, which has been studied, prescribing less medication towards Black people. Teachers and school administrators handing out more severe punishments towards Black students because of whatever they have going on. And they may not even believe that they're doing it, may not even be aware that they're doing it, but they are doing it. What do I think happened on this night concerning Amber Guyger? I think that it was a little bit of her implicit bias. So let's just walk through this now. So Amber Guyger gets off of work after working about 13 and a half hours. Okay, that's all fine and dandy. She's working 13 and a half hours. So number one, she's texting her boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, lover, whatever. She's texting him, sending pictures, and trying to arrange some type of rendezvous. So clearly her mind was focused enough to be concentrating on texting. If she drove home, her mind was functioning well enough so that she was able to respond to the certain text messages that were coming through. She gets to the apartment, and again, I would really suggest that people really watch the prosecutors break down their final closing argument. There's two different prosecutors who give closing arguments, each about 25 minutes, really worth the watch. They really break down what happened when it comes to Amber Guyger getting out of her car. She backed into her parking space, what she thought was her parking space, backed into it, as most police officers do, walks into her apartment, goes to the left, doesn't recognize anything as far as different flower pots and different decorations that are in the hallway, doesn't recognize any of that, maybe because her head was in her phone as far as responding to and sending these text messages. Botham John's apartment had a red floor mat. This has been highly publicized, had a red floor mat. Amber Guyger is now walking on a concrete floor and then steps onto this red carpet. Some type of tactile sensation should have registered in her mind, but it didn't. She puts her key in the door. There's a red light, I guess, on the key that does not respond. However, she was able to open the door. She was able to open the door because it was slightly ajar, and therefore not adequately locked and secure, so she was able to open it up. She hears what sounds like is some rumbling going on inside. As the prosecutor breaks it down, she takes her right hand, because she's right-handed, off the key, places it on her weapon, draws her weapon, pushes the door with her left hand, and then puts her bag on the floor to prop the door open, walks inside, and then confronts Mr. Jean. Here's where the prosecution, in my estimation, really made their case, is that according to the training that police officers get, we all get, is that if you have a burglary suspect and you hear something going inside, you stand your ground, try to get cover and or try to get cover and concealment, call for help. She was texting whoever she was texting. She could have easily picked up the phone and said, hey, listen, somebody's in my apartment. I'm at such and such address. Get somebody over here fast. You know, I'm one of you. Get somebody over here. There's somebody burglarizing my apartment. Amber Geiger doesn't do this, right? Even though she's confused as to where she is, she thinks that she's at her apartment. She doesn't do this. And she goes inside against the training the Dallas Police Department and most police officers have received. She goes inside, confronts this guy. She sees this individual stand up because Mr. John was now eating ice cream, settled in for the night, watching TV, eating ice cream. He then puts his ice cream down, says, hey, 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 starts to stand up. And Amber Geiger then starts blowing rounds at him. I hear you asking, Captain Hunt, where's the implicit bias in this? Do you think, and ask yourself, close your eyes once again, as we did this thought exercise a little bit earlier, if the roles were reversed, do you think that if Amber Geiger had walked into an apartment and saw a white male, a white female, an Asian person, would she have had the same response? I'll wait. Now, listen, I don't like going there with this, but I think that this is the problem. We have to acknowledge implicit bias. Implicit bias attributes criminality to African Americans. It has since the founding of this country, and it continues to go on today. This is not Captain Hunter saying this. This is years and years and years of research. This is media corporations continuing to press and to push this narrative that African Americans are hell-bent on committing crimes. Now, listen, let's just be honest and let's try to call balls and strikes here, as any good umpire and referee does. African Americans in certain neighborhoods and certain places do commit more crimes and are certainly at a higher percentage proportionally in committing crimes. But when we go through a lot of statistics, these statistics do not bear out that there should be any type of fear of African American males. This has been a problem. And so therefore, I think that this is where the implicit bias comes in at. And listen, this is me speculating. Is the same response going to be given? Is the same response going to be given by Amber Geiger to anyone else that she sees in an apartment? Let's break it down to you. Is the same response going to be given by you if you were placed in a similar situation in which you came home and you were confronted by, and just imagine this now, a stranger in your home? Would the race determine your response? Would the size of the individual determine your response? Would the gender of the person determine your response? All these things are factors. Most people want to be is treated equally and fairly and seen and judged equally and fairly. And an unfair label has been placed upon black males that they are more prone to criminality. And I think that this is what caused Amber Geiger to respond in the way that she did. Can't prove this, just my own thought process. The problem with history is that it cannot be repeated, and we can't place anyone else in Amber Geiger's shoes at that particular time. But we do know through studies of implicit bias that this often, what I'm talking about is often the mindset of people and their response. She sees a man sitting in her apartment. None of this registers. None of this registers to Ms. Geiger that she's in the wrong apartment, and her only thought process is to go to the gun. Now, I've talked about this a number of other episodes where it's the training that's the problem. Police officers are trained in such a way that is really becoming problematic. As a police officer, you have to have some level of initiation, some level of bravery, of an unwillingness to back down, a willingness to confront problems and people who are posing an issue. And I can imagine at the time that Ms. Geiger walked into her apartment, she was probably thinking, I'm home from a long day. Oh, hell no. Nah. Somebody's in my apartment burglarizing it. Let me go in here and handle this. But that's not what her police training should have done. And that's not what an ordinary citizen would have done. I can't tell you, and I'm sure many police officers will tell you, how many times we get calls to a past burglary where the homeowners have come home and they've been waiting outside and they wait for the police in order to go inside to clear their house. This is the normal protocol. Amber Geiger should have taken out that same frame of mind. Stayed by the door, maybe even yell inside, "Hey, whoever you are, I'm a police officer. You're in my apartment. Why don't you come on out here slowly with your hands up?" As the prosecution said during the closing argument, this whole thing would not have happened. They probably would have had a good laugh. They might even have shared a bowl of ice cream together. And none of this would have happened. But it was her, and this is what caused the murder charge. This is what caused the murder conviction, as I'll read to you in a little bit. So I think that there's a combination of the implicit bias, Amber Geiger's not willingness to listen to her training and to wait for backup or call for backup. This is what caused the demise of Botham John. Couple the two things together. Now tell me if I'm wrong. If you don't believe that it was any part implicit bias, if you think that Amber Geiger arrives at her home, she opens up the door and sees a redhead female in her apartment and does the same exact actions, sees a female in her apartment, sees this female stand up or Hispanic female stand up. If I'm wrong about that, let me know. Hit me back. Let me know if I'm wrong about that. Does Amber Geiger respond in the same way if she sees a female in an apartment or another male, maybe even another race? You really believe that if she saw, you know what? I will even admit that if she saw another male, particularly if the guy was a large male, despite the race, that she probably would have responded in the same way. I will actually admit that. The Captain Hunter, are you backing off in your implicit bias opinion? No, I'm not. I still think that it had something to do with it. But I do think, given her state of mind, state of fear, level of fear, and the training, which we're going to get back to in a second, that she still would have reacted the same way. Let me get back to this idea that I was starting to go through with training. Training is the problem. We keep going to the gun too fast. We keep going to the gun too fast. This is what causing a lot of animus. And many times, there are police officers, there are people who are being shot and killed because police officers are going to the gun. We have a whole host of weapons, of items on our tool belt, mace, tasers, batons. We have backup. We have other methods. We don't have to kill people. It has to be the last resort. And for too many of us, it's the first resort. It's our only weapon that is getting us. It is our only line of thinking. As soon as something happens, we immediately, I can't even imagine the thought process, because I didn't think like this. I can't imagine the thought process that something's going on, somebody's running through the woods, somebody's entering an apartment, and my first instinct is to brandish my weapon. I don't understand it. I do not understand it. So I think that Botham John's demise can be chalked up to implicit bias and bad training and or lack of training and or adherence to the training by Ms. Geiger. She's testified that she didn't remember the training. She didn't do anything when Botham John is shot. Listen, people are making a big deal about him, that she didn't do anything. Listen, the man was shot in the heart. Even if she did everything from the time that the bullet left her gun into helping him, he still would have died. So that's not, to me, that's not so much of an issue as to what she did post him being shot. The problem is, number one, is she did not adhere to the implicit bias training, did not adhere to the de-escalation training that she received in April 2018. She didn't adhere to it. She didn't adhere to the tactical training of standing by, covering concealment, and waiting for backup officers. Those are the two biggest things that she didn't do. She didn't take any time to recognize and to be the trained observer that she was trained to be and understand where she was and where she was at. If she had recognized that there was a person in her apartment, and she would have called for backup and been able to radio in and say, "Listen, I'm at apartment such and such, and this is what's going on," and maybe even looked up the door and took note of where she was, glanced through the hallways and make sure that there was no one else who was lying in wait, some type of lookout or anything like that, then this whole thing doesn't happen. Then this whole thing doesn't happen. This is the problem that Ms. Geiger had, and that's why she was found guilty of murder. I hope that I have created the nexus, and I hope that I have articulated why I think implicit bias played a part. And then listen, implicit bias does, it once again, doesn't have to be about males. It doesn't have to be about black males in particular. Although I do think it did play a part, if I'm going to be honest. And once again, I think there was just bad tactics on her part. So let's just address some of the minor issues that I think that people have been talking about. Let's talk about how Ms. Geiger was given some preferential treatment. Well, yes and no. There's been numerous articles out there talking about how the apparently Dallas Police Department has cameras within their cars. Her union representative, I believe his name is Mata, M-A-T-A, shows up, tells the subordinate who's watching Ms. Geiger after she was escorted out of the house, obviously, right? Police officers get there. We're fast forwarding, obviously, so stay with me. She's escorted out of the house, told to sit in the police car because you got to figure out what's going on, right? This is post Botham John shot. He's laying on the floor, most likely dead at this particular point. She's now told to go outside and wait, get her away from the crime scene and all that kind of stuff. Ms. Geiger then is sitting in the police car. There's cameras on her. She's seen texting in the car. Her union rep shows up and tells the subordinate who's watching her to shut out the camera. They do this because they want to afford Ms. Geiger some privacy as they discuss what's going on. I don't really have a problem with any of this. I don't think that it's a big deal. There is some discrepancy and there is some pushback as to what rights a police officer has versus an ordinary citizen. We can certainly have that discussion. I know that many police departments have a police officer's bill of rights, something that they want state by state, but certainly they probably want nationally a police officer's bill of rights. How certain in any instances of use of deadly force is going to be handled and how police officers are treated, right? We ask police officers to go into dangerous situations, and when they respond to those dangerous situations with the use of deadly force, then we want to treat them like ordinary citizens. Well, I do understand that we ought to be able to treat them just a little bit differently because we've asked for them and they have signed up to be that watchman on the wall and to be that guardian on the wall. So in order to get people's stories straight, I don't really have a problem with that. Listen, ordinary citizens have a chance to talk to the lawyers before you give a statement. So let's not make it seem like that police officers are getting something that no one else is getting. They have a chance to talk to the union reps and or a lawyer. Citizens, also, you don't have to give a statement. You know, just because the police officers have asked you to go downtown because you're a witness to the crime or maybe even have committed a crime, remember that you have the right to remain silent. They're telling you that, and you have the right to consult with an attorney. Use those rights. Police officers, on the other hand, are actually compelled to speak. You cannot, as a police officer, refuse to cooperate with the investigation. You shoot someone and then say, well, listen, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. No, it doesn't work that way. I mean, you certainly can do it as far as the legal implications, but you're going to be terminated and lose your job and all that kind of stuff. And if you're going to go down that road, then the city most likely will not cover your expenses as far as acting under the color of the law and as a police officer. So the choice is yours. So that's just a little bit of the difference between those particular instances. So let's just talk a little bit about what happened. Now, it took 3 days of investigation. Is this really abnormal? Well, I can tell you that one time when I was a patrolman, there was a situation in which a brother was fighting his brother, and somehow, some way, one brother killed his brother. And I couldn't understand, as a young rookie officer, I was probably on the job for maybe a year or two at the time, why the detectives didn't take this guy downtown. Now they're all there. They're all in the house. The guy is still laying there dead. The mother of the two adult men were there. I believe the father was there as well. They're all having a conversation and talking, and they're hashing all this out. And they had made the determination at that time that it was self-defense. Whatever the aggressor had done, essentially got him killed. They consulted with the state's attorney, and they decided not to arrest him. They did obviously take him downtown to lock him into a statement and all that kind of stuff. However, it's not that unusual. My point is, it's not that unusual to take your time with these investigations. It's not open and shut. I mean, she may have been acting under color of law. So just because they waited 3 days isn't necessarily the way that it can go. In many cases, it's the same situation with civilians. Until forensics comes in, until we get all witness statements, you as a citizen may be free to leave. It's a case-by-case scenario. Just because she was a Dallas police officer doesn't necessarily mean that she was treated a certain way. It could be, and it could not be. But 3 days later, which is a relatively short period of time, right? They're looking at things, they're gathering evidence. They had over 300 witnesses they had to interview. And so once they had done all that, then they decided, okay, yes, there's enough probable cause here to make the arrest. They then asked Ms. Geiger to turn herself in 3 days later, and then she is arrested. In the case of whether she was given special treatment, I can't really go along with that. She was afforded the chance and the opportunity that many other people would get in certain circumstances. At least that's my estimation of it. So show me some examples, some similar situations in which the evidence is not clear and concise and we're making arrests. And I would probably show you some places where they're jumping to conclusions and they probably even have failed to get convictions. So they want to do it right. Doesn't mean you have to agree. What I'm trying to do right now is just give you the reasons as to what's going on and give you the reasons as to why the police officers and the prosecutors may have done what they have done. Let's talk about the murder, why she was convicted of murder. I am not a legal expert. I do want to have some lawyers on so we can talk about this, particularly someone from Texas I have reached out. So we'll see, we may do another follow-up to this just so we can get some clarification. However, let me read to you the Texas Penal Code concerning murder. They have a couple of different instances. They have adequate cause. They have sudden passion. But essentially, a person commits the offense of murder if he intentionally or knowingly causes the death of an individual, intends to cause serious bodily injury, and commits an act clearly dangerous to human life that causes the death of an individual. So that's it right there. When Amber Geiger testified in court that she knew what a gun could do, she knew what a bullet can do to the human body, and that when she fired the shot, she knew and that she had actually intended to kill Botham John. This statute that I just read, well, let me read it again. A person commits an offense if he intentionally or knowingly causes the death of an individual, intends to cause serious bodily injury, and commits an act clearly dangerous to human life that causes the death of an individual. That is the definition. There's many other things that people can read. This is section 1902, the definition of murder, from the title 5, chapter 19, criminal homicide, point 2, the definition of murder. Ms. Geiger engaged in action that she knew was likely to cause bodily harm, and so that's why she was convicted of murder. There was a lot of contention as to whether this was the right charge. Was the prosecution trying to throw the case because they were overcharging? And listen, they got it. I mean, the prosecution, once again, I think they did a fantastic job in doing their job. So Ms. Geiger was going to be sentenced to 10 years. She would be eligible for parole after 5 years. Possibility of some good behavior, so 2, 3, 4 years. I'm going to bet on she's going to do about 3 years and then she'll get out for good behavior. That's my estimation. Well, how do I feel about that? How do you feel about that, Captain Hunter? Well, I'm glad you guys asked. I do believe that Amber Geiger truly made a mistake. I think that her head was somewhere else. She may have been a little bit tired, but she was planning on some extracurricular activities, as the text messages and all that say. And I don't believe that she had any malice, or I just think that she made a terrible, horrible mistake. As a side note here, let me just mention an episode I'm going to have with Michael Bell. You guys got to listen to these episodes of Michael Bell. He's talking about this kind of thing. When police officers just make mistakes, there needs to be an independent body that is looking at the facts and the circumstances to try to find out what happened. Amber Geiger was probably tired. She was texting. Her mind was elsewhere. She didn't recognize where she was. And when she got to her apartment, as once again, I'm going to say, she probably got hyped up and said, oh, hell no, somebody's in my apartment. I'm going to confront this SOB and let me take him out. She didn't grab the cover. She didn't get concealment. She didn't call for backup. She didn't take time as a trained observer to notice where she was. And she engaged when she should not have. And it was just a horrible, terrible mistake. If they gave her 20, 30 years, is that really going to bring both of them back? No. There was no malice. She did not wake up saying, you know what, this SOB upstairs is always playing his music. He's always smoking weed. He knows I'm a cop down here. He's always taking my parking space. We had a fight last night. There was no animus there. It was just a mistake. You know, this is hard to say, but it was just a mistake. I don't want my loved one to be killed by any mistake and by a police officer who is supposed to know better, supposed to do better, who is supposed to remember the training. The training should kick in when at these times, but it didn't. And this is the problem, that the training didn't kick in. The bias training didn't kick in, if she ever had it. I'm assuming in 5 years she did. She had de-escalation training. That didn't kick in. Her training about how to handle burglary suspects and building clearance didn't kick in. And this is the problem a lot of people are having with law enforcement, is that this training is not kicking in and or working. We're giving it out, but when it comes time to high stress, it's not working. It's not working. And this is why we continue to have the problems. Moving on to the next topic of everyone feeling bad for Ms. Geiger and everyone giving her hugs. There was a report that one of the sheriff deputies was combing her hair. They were hugging her, patting her. The judge gave her a hug. Both of them, John's brother, gave her a hug after the trial, after she was sentenced. I don't want to see anyone hurt. I feel bad for Ms. Geiger, as we all felt bad for this situation. I think that everybody just realized that this was just a horrible, horrible mistake. We're glad that someone is going to be held accountable for the mistake, but it was a mistake. A few more words about this hugging business, Bible giving business by Judge Kemp. She ran a great courtroom up until that point. Giving out Bibles, giving out hugs. I mean, you had to show some level of empathy, as Judge Owen talked about in a previous episode. But I do think that giving out hugs, giving out Bibles, giving out scriptures was just too far. It's my understanding that the Freedom From Religion Foundation has now filed a lawsuit against the judge, trying to get her censured or whatever they're trying to do. People are really upset about their brother giving hugs, the sheriff's deputy showing empathy. Ms. Geiger was convicted of murder. Treat her like any other suspect or anyone else who has been convicted of murder. Once Amber Geiger gets 10 years, she'll probably only do 5 or less years. I wonder if they still have all this type of remorse that's going on. I wonder if they'll still have this sense of sadness and forgiveness. That's what's going on. There are people in prisons doing 20 years of life for selling drugs. Ms. Geiger took someone's life, and she's going to get about 5 years, and people are hugging and loving on her. This has to stop. This mindset that we have, it has to stop. Again, we can't let this implicit bias, we can't let this deference or preference that we have for law enforcement officers, the way that people look, their petiteness, their femininity, whatever, their beauty, you can't let that color how you conduct yourself in the courtroom and or how you conduct yourself professionally. This is the point. When we have this preference for people, and we don't share that same level of preference for other people, this is implicit bias, and we cannot allow it to happen. We cannot allow it to happen. The display after it has driven people nuts, and understandably so. We cannot allow that kind of thing to color how we approach each and every defendant. We must treat everyone equally under the law. And I do believe that the judge's actions in handing out Bibles and giving out scriptures was just too much. Listen, just the facts, man. We got to keep this thing straight and right. But I think the jury got it right as far as the sentencing. I think that the case went down as the way it should have. Somebody has to be held accountable when somebody dies. And according to Texas statute, this was the right call. So what can we as law enforcement do to learn from this? Listen, you got to let the training kick in. You got to be aware of your surroundings. You got to know where you are and what you're doing at all times. You got to perk up concerning your surroundings. Know where you are. Know what's going on around you. As police officers, you cannot afford to be lax in understanding your surroundings. I've been retired for only a few months now, and that training is still in me, that I'm still aware of what's going on around me. You have to be that way. There's somebody that you arrested and might be mad at you, or know that you're a police officer, might be trying to ambush you. You cannot be that so engrossed in your texts. You cannot be that so tired until you actually close the door behind you in your own home, until you get behind your own door and close your own door. That's the only time you really should relax. And it's this heightened state of awareness, I understand, is tiring and exhausting. I understand that. But this is the way you have to be. This is the way you have to think. What if a fight breaks out where you are as an officer? What if a fight broke out where Amber Geiger was and she's calling for help and she's calling in the wrong floor? You have to know where you are. You have to know where you are and what you're doing. You can't be so engrossed in your phone. And so what can we learn from law enforcement? So I think that's number one. Be alert and aware of your surroundings until you are completely in your own home or in a completely safe environment. Second of all, I would say what we can learn from this is listen to and learn your training. Listen to and abide by your training. De-escalation training, implicit bias training, use of force training, burglary, larceny, taking people into custody training. Stop chasing after people, especially if you're off duty. You don't have these other tools in your belt, handcuffs, taser, mace, other weapons. You don't have any of that. So watch what you're doing. Be a good witness and just call stuff in from a law enforcement perspective. It doesn't mean you can't fire your weapon when your life is being challenged, but you have to be sure. I'll say this all the time. You have to be sure about when your life is being challenged. California law AB 392 is changing that. You can't just say the wallet that he had, I thought was a gun. Oh, too bad, so sad. You know what? He was reaching for his pocket. I thought it was a gun. Turned out just to be a cell phone. Oh, too bad. So sad. Give the family $3 million and let's call it a day. Nah, that's not good enough. It's not good enough anymore. It never should have been good enough. And fortunately, cases like this, Amber Geiger, AB 392, and other states and cities that are changing their use of force policies, this never should have been okay. And so that's what we can learn. So abide by your training, be alert, be conscious, and don't be scared and afraid to do your job. It doesn't change anything. There are some groups down in the Dallas area who are still dissatisfied with how the Dallas Police Department handled the case. They felt as if Ms. Geiger should have been arrested sooner, that she got special treatment. And so they're going to be looking into all that. Listen, I could be wrong. I'll be willing to stand corrected. From the looks of it, I can understand why they did what they did. I know there are numerous cases where we have to wait for the forensics in order to come back and get all those witness statements. And that may take a day or two before we actually secure an arrest warrant and take people into custody. Just because you have someone there at that particular time, just because you have a suspect there at a particular time, doesn't mean you have to make the arrest. You have to be sure about what you're doing. If you remember the movie Training Day, it's not what you know, it's what you can prove. And until the police can bring a solid case to the prosecutors, they should not be acting hastily. Continuing with the question of how does this affect law enforcement, as I mentioned the Michael Bell situation, make sure you guys listen to that episode. As far as off-duty incidents, departments really should develop a protocol about how they're going to investigate, number one, on-duty shootings and off-duty shooting. And so this was an off-duty shooting, but they treated it like an on-duty shooting, so they really need to develop a protocol.
And I don't necessarily have a problem with that, because remember that even though a police officer is technically off-duty, they're always on duty, right? They always have to have this heightened state of awareness. They have to act as witnesses, and they are mandated to take some type of action whenever they see a crime afoot, misdemeanors, and it's particularly felonies. You have to respond to the police officer. So therefore, treating an incident going from being off duty to going to on duty is a matter of seconds. And so therefore, it's not always necessary, prudent to treat the officer as if he's off duty, because once he starts acting in the capacity of a police officer, he's then on duty. For the public, just to be very mindful of that. Whenever an officer who is off duty responds in any police type of action, he's now on duty. So understand that.
In hindsight, I don't think that the Texas Rangers did a terrible job. I mean, they did their job. They came in and they did what they had to do. They did what they had to do, and they brought charges. I do disagree with the Texas Ranger, Sergeant Armstrong. He stated that Amber Geiger did nothing wrong, given the totality of the circumstances. Ms. Geiger had done nothing wrong. Fortunately, his ridiculous testimony should not and was not admitted into court before the jury. Another witness tried to testify. Former Dallas Chief Craig Miller tried to also say that this inattentional blindness or tunnel vision was a reason that Amber Geiger did nothing wrong. Completely disagree with that. All nonsense. Unfortunately, the jury was able to see through that. This is another thing that is difficult for the community to accept when law enforcement officers say silly things like this. So just to recap, ladies and gentlemen, what can law enforcement do? We went over what law enforcement can do, should do, can learn from this. So let me just talk to you as a citizen. What can you do? It's very important to vote. Remember, chiefs of police serve at the pleasure of the mayor. It's very important for you to get out there and to vote. Sit on the juries. You have to sit on the juries. Stop ducking jury duty. Sit on the juries. That way you can have a say on these situations. I don't listen to anyone who doesn't vote and or sit on the juries. You have to be a part of the process. You can't complain that the system is racist, that the police are racist, that prosecutors are racist. You can't complain about that if you're not a part of the solution. If you're not sitting there giving your input, speaking up, then you really have nothing to say. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen, for today's episode. That was just a little recap concerning the Amber Geiger case. My thoughts and my opinions are on it. I hope that I've shed some light into a little bit of the police world and why they do what they do and why they think what they think. Listen, it's a bittersweet, because I feel bad for Amber Geiger, because I do think that she made a mistake. I do want all law enforcement officers to act professionally at all times. But when we make mistakes, we have to be held accountable. And that was for me too. Listen, I'd love to be able to sit here and say that I made it through my career without having made a mistake. I did make mistakes, and you have to face the piper and face the discipline. And unfortunately, Amber Geiger will have to face that. Now, she will be okay. I can almost guarantee she will be okay. She'll probably write a book. You know, she'll probably go on some speaking tours or stuff like that. She'll be okay. Botham John is gone forever. The family will have to heal from that. No amount of money will replace that. I really just believe that once you look at all the facts, Amber Geiger's state of mind, she just made a mistake. And now I know that members of the Black community have been harping on all this forgiveness that's going on. And I also must say that I have a hard time forgiving people when they have wronged us. But this was a mistake. This was a mistake. This was not the intentional, typical racist act towards us, if I can word it like that. This was simply a mistake. I do believe there was a little bit of implicit bias going on. Let me end off with this and just talk about these text messages that became a part of the trial. The accusations that Amber Geiger was a racist. Now, she has to pay for an answer to the text messages that she sent and that she laughed at and that she, whatever. You have to pay for that. I'm not going to make any kind of excuses for any of that stuff. It's ugly, it's heinous, but it is what it is. Do I think in my heart, Captain Hunter, Lawrence Hunter, do I think that Amber Geiger was a racist? No, I don't think that. I think that what she did was dumb and stupid, but I don't think she walked into a Black guy's apartment and just blew him away for no reason. That's a ridiculous assessment. It's a ridiculous way of thinking about it. And I don't think that is what happened. Nevertheless, Amber Geiger has to pay for what she did. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Hit me up, CPTL Hunter on Twitter, CPTL Hunter on Instagram. You guys can support the podcast through Venmo, CPTL Hunter. That's Captain L Hunter. Cash App, CPTL Hunter. PayPal, CPTL Hunter. Please support the program. Make sure you subscribe, share, and like, no matter what platform you're listening to it on. Tell somebody about the episodes. Tell them what we got going on over here at Captain Hunter's podcast. And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Until next time, much love and peace. This was a bonus episode. We're still going to be releasing the episodes on Sunday. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Until next time, much love and peace.